My greetings, everybody. Once again, I might announce now I am not planning to be with you next Sabbath. I'm planning to be in Oklahoma City to teach you the brethren of combined churches in that area of the country. But I'm here when I can be. At this season of the year, a phenomenon is playing a very great part in the lives of almost everybody all over the world. The first you know that phenomenon is Christmas. But why? You know, the average person looks forward to Christmas. It's a big thing in their lives. Many people are looking forward to it throughout the year. Many people have savings, plans to save up money to do some shopping, to buy presents, to trade and exchange back and forth with other people. They don't know themselves why they do it. Some people think they do it because it celebrates Christ's birthday. But even they don't look into it, and they don't really understand, or they don't know. Actually, it doesn't celebrate Christ's birthday at all. There are newspaper headlines at this time of the year that say that there's a great increase in crime, there's a great increase in shoplifting in stores, just stealing, running into hundreds of millions of dollars all over the nation. There's an increase in murders in the home, other places. Christmas is a time of merrymaking. But they usually use alcohol and other stimulants to make themselves merry. And it leaves them rather dead after it's over. Why do they do it? They don't know. Why does it influence such a great portion of the people? A lot of people think that Christmas started with the early church, or that it's in the Bible. There's not a word in the Bible about it. In fact, the Bible is very careful to conceal the date of the birthday of Christ. No one knows when he was born. We do know this much about it. It was before the winter season. It is while the sheep were still out in the pasture. And they were always corralled all from 6 to 8 weeks before Christmas and brought in. And were not out with the shepherds watching over them. It was not observed by the first century church. It was not observed by the apostles. People don't understand where the church got it. The church didn't get it for 300 years in the 4th century before it came into the church. And it came from an ancient pagan custom. They got it from the ancient pagan customs back as far as ancient Egypt. There's an ancient Egyptian sculpture. We have a picture of it in our booklet, What Do You Mean, Christmas, and Why Do People Observe Christmas? Now, if you haven't read that recently, and most of us have not, we've been taking this thing for granted. We've understood the truth about Christmas in this church, and we suppose, well, we understand it. Perhaps we ought to read it all over again. You ought to get that booklet and read it once again. And in it there is a picture of an ancient Egyptian sculpture of a Madonna and child. In other words, it is the sun god of Horus and his mother god Semiramis. And Horus actually was the Nimrod of the Bible. So the ancient Egyptians got it clear back from the time of Nimrod and his mother wife, Semiramis. The first time I ever visited in Cairo, Egypt, I think it was in 1956, and my wife and I stayed in the Semiramis Hotel. I think it's been torn down now, and they're building a new Semiramis Hotel there. And even the Hilton Hotel, where we stayed this year, and I've stayed a number of times before, is beginning to look a little bit old now. It isn't new any longer, but it's been built since our first visit there. There are hotels named after Semiramis in a number of Middle Eastern cities. One, as I remember, in Damascus, the Semiramis Hotel. Semiramis was the famous mother-wife, the goddess, who was the sun goddess. And it goes clear back in your Bible to the 10th chapter of Genesis. Now, the 10th chapter of Genesis gives us the genealogy of the sons of Noah. And I'd like to read you just a little bit of it. Genesis 10, verse 8. No, verse 6 and then verses. Beginning with verse 8. And the sons of Ham. Ham was one of the sons of Noah. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, and Phut, and Canaan. Now, and Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Eternal, wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Eternal. That is, he put himself before God the Creator. He put himself as number one on the earth, as the greatest man. But he was more or less ruled by his mother wife, Semiramis. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, the Tower of Babel, and later the city of Babylon, which was the first capital of the first real empire in the world. And Eruk, and Akkad, and Calneh, and the land of Shinar. And out of the land went forth Asher, and he builded Nineveh. And of course, Assyria is named after Asher, or Assyria. He builded Nineveh, which is probably the oldest city still remaining in the world today. I've been there. He builded Nineveh, and the city of Rehoboth and of Calah. And reason between Nineveh and Calah, the same as the great city, it was at the time this was written, when Moses wrote it, and Mizraim begat Ludum, and, well, it gives a few more that were children, and Canaan begat Sidon, the firstborn, and Heth, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite, and Girgashite. Now, the Jebusites were the first settlers in what is now called Jerusalem. And David went up among the Jebusites and started building Jerusalem. The Jebusites were there in the days of Abraham. So it goes clear back to that time, just after the flood. Now, you would think that people would have learned their lesson in the flood, but there's a reason why they didn't. They didn't learn any lesson at all about God, but some knowledge of God had been passed on. We read in the New Testament that Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God, was slain from the foundation of the world. Now, they knew something about that. It was sort of known that the Messiah would ultimately come from a virgin mother, that he would be both man and God, that he would be born of a human virgin, a human mother. Semiramis claimed that she was that mother, and she married her own son, Nimrod. He became great. He built cities, but he was a ruler. He wanted to be the big I Am. He wanted to be the big boss. But he had more skill and more ability than most others. He was the first one when They were driven to fear of animals to start building a city with a wall surrounding it. And originally, walls around cities were built to protect the people from the wild animals. When there weren't very many people on the earth, back in the early days of mankind. But Semiramis is a type of evil. And she called her son the sun god. And she developed a religion. She claimed to be the virgin. And Nimrod became a sun god and was worshipped. And then it got into the ancient Egyptian worship of Isis and Osiris, and the ancient gods of ancient Egypt. So Nimrod was a ruler. He was on the principle of get. I love me. I want to get. I want to rule over others. I want to take away from others. Now, he was willing to protect others as long as he could take from them. He wanted to protect. Well, if you've ever studied a type of psychology that I remember studying when I was in my early 20s, there was a book of psychology that came out at that time, and it really had a lot of psychology that the modern psychologists are not teaching in the universities today. It taught about self and what self is. It taught about an empirical self. Now, there's no such word in the dictionary. There's the word empirical. That's a different word with a different meaning. But he meant empirical from the sense of an empire. Yourself is a sort of an empire. Now, it includes first whatever is yours, whatever is closest to you. Your clothes, the house you live in, if it's yours, then your children. Maybe even your mother and father, you call them yours, your mother, your father. Whatever you call yours. Then it extends on to even your relatives. Then, as you grow up in your teens, you get interested in sports. Your team is part of self. And your team is against the other team. It's always competitive. Self is against whatever is not self. Your team is self. And therefore, you love that to that extent instead of loving the one that it's in competition against. Now, you can carry that on, and you see, in the case of war, your country is part of self. That's why people are willing to go to war and even die for their country. It's dying for self-love. And self-love is the very essence of sin. And it started from the very, very beginning. So, Christmas sort of sprouted out of this Nimrod Semiramis situation. But the origin of it all was even a great deal earlier than that. Now, this world began with the first Adam. I've had a lot to say recently about the two trees and Adam. And someone will say, well, now here goes Mr. Armstrong once again. And I'm going to go back to it again and again and again, as Franklin Roosevelt used to say, because everything started at that time, this world. And we need to know what this world is, because God is calling us out of this world to be separate. And we should not be part of this world. Well, what's wrong with this world? Why isn't it all right? Most people seem to think it is all right. So we get back to those two trees once again that were symbolic trees. Now, I don't question that there were two actual literal trees that really grew out of the ground in that garden. But the fact of being literal trees is not the point. It is what they symbolized, what they meant, what they represented. And they did represent something. And they represented the two ways of existence. Now we find in Genesis 1, verse 1, in the beginning, God, Elohim, created the heavens and the earth. And Elohim means more than one person, but only one God. God was like a family. You read of it in the New Testament, the Word and God, and the Word was with God. And the Word was a person, and God was another person. And there were two persons, but they formed God. they formed Elohim. And in Genesis 1, verse 26, Elohim said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." God was going to reproduce himself. Now, God, we find, is a spirit. He is composed of spirit. He has immortal, everlasting life. He doesn't have physical life that comes from the earth. He has spirit life that is life inherent. He could not be killed. He cannot die. He is everlastingly alive. And even of Christ, who was the Word made flesh and born of the Virgin Mary, we read in Hebrews that he was without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but have always existed. And your mind won't conceive of that, neither does mine, for that matter. We just have to accept it. Life had to always exist. Where did life come from? There's a good story in the new issue just came out, at least I think it just came out yesterday. It was the first I saw of it, of our new magazine for youth. Well, as a matter of fact, the Plain Truth and the Good News all came out yesterday. At least they were all delivered to my office yesterday. The new Good News, the new Youth 81. And that'll be the last Youth 81, by the way. That doesn't mean we're just going to discontinue the magazine either. But the next issue will be called Youth 82. And a year later, it'll be Youth 83. And I hope that during Youth 82, it'll be ultimately twice as many pages as it is now. But this last issue is much, much better than it was 6 or 7 months ago. It is becoming very, very good, and I'm very well pleased with it. I'm just more than pleased with it. To have a magazine like that for young people, I remember when I was just a teenager, there was a magazine called Youth Home Companion. I don't think any of you remember of that. Only be some of the real oldest ones of you, if any of you do. It was a little larger magazine. It had been going for some time, and it probably had even a bigger circulation than ours. It's just distributed among the youth of our own church. But it's going to grow bigger. I know the thing just came up recently in a letter that I was writing to the entire subscription list of the Plain Truth. And the entire subscription list runs into about 4 million. It's only, however, it's over 2 million just in the United States alone and Canada. And in offering them a booklet, I just mentioned Youth 81. And if they have a youth or a teenager that would like to see a good magazine for young people, why don't you write in for a sample copy? You know, the question came up, should we offer it to the youth of the world? And I said, why not? Why not? It'll teach them some of the good things that they ought to know. It'll teach even young people and kids something about the Sabbath. It's a most interesting magazine. But it's going to get better and better and bigger and bigger. And I hope that it'll become a really big magazine, like The Plain Truth is among adults. But of these two trees that were before the first man, now, God said, let us make man after our image, after our likeness. But he didn't make man of the same immortal spirit that God was composed of, because God formed man of the dust of the ground, as you read in Genesis 2 and verse 7, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man from the dust of the ground became a soul. And so the soul came out of the ground. The soul is material. The soul is not spirit. And yet God did put a spirit in man. The spirit in man works with the brain in man. Now, animals have brains and just as good as human brains. And some of them even larger, elephants and dolphins and whales have larger brains. Others slightly smaller, some of the monkey family, the anthropoid ape, and so on. But they can't use their brains like a human can because there's no spirit in them to give them instant recall of knowledge and to record and file it and to be like a computer to keep it recorded and give instant recall so you can put this and that and the other facts of acquired knowledge together with other facts and in a process we call reasoning and thinking. Man thinks, at least he thinks, but do animals really think? They can't think and reason like we do. Come to conclusions, make decisions, think creatively, plan. God has given us a mind like God. Now, God has a mind, but man's mind is limited in a way that God's mind is not. Now, I'm going back to this original teaching again, but every time God may give me another little part of this story that I didn't get over to you before. For example, a part of what God has given man is to comprehend things that animals cannot. Now, man has a mind that can acquire knowledge of the physical and the material. Things that he can see. Now, he can only see matter. Matter can be present in three forms, the solid form, like wood, like stone, or iron, or ice, the liquid form, like water, the gaseous form, like air, water below 32 degrees Fahrenheit becomes solid ice. Above 212 degrees Fahrenheit, it evaporates and becomes vapor or air. A gaseous form. And so the earth even includes all the earth's atmosphere, up including the clouds. That's part of the earth. The Bible speaks about on the earth and in the earth and uses such terms. We sometimes don't realize that the Bible really does distinguish on those things. But of those two trees before Adam, now he was only given a temporary existence. He did not have immortal life, but he was made like God. And he had a mind like God, but not as good as God. His mind was limited to what he could see or hear through his ear or taste or smell through his nose or through the sense of feel and touch. Now, you can't see spirit, you can't feel it, you can't hear it, you can't taste it or smell it. So man was not able to learn anything about spirit. Man was limited to physical knowledge. That's why man has been able to accomplish awesome things in progress dealing with matter. And even then, it has taken him 6,000 years to do it. And most of the great progress in even physical material areas has been in this 20th century, since many of us were born. And I was born before this century, 8 years before this century even started. I very well remember the midnight when the old century passed out and the new one came in. And I was sitting in a Methodist church, and they kept me awake. It was the church that my grandpa and grandfather belonged to. And they were having a watch night service to see the old century out and the new century in. I couldn't see any sense to that century in and out. I was 7.5 years old. And I wanted to doze off and go to sleep, and my father would shake me and wake me up. Or he'd thump me right beside the ear, keep me awake. And I didn't see any sense in that at all. But finally, midnight came, and I was able to let him take me home and put me to bed. But I do remember it very well. I don't think very many of you here remember that, because you've all been born in this century. I mean, most of you have, certainly. But now, here was Adam with a temporary existence, with a mind limited to the physical and the material, a mind that could acquire by itself physical and material knowledge, with a spirit in man that could store up that knowledge in the form of memory, could, like a computer, which we didn't understand until the last 15 or 20 years, before we even knew anything about such a thing, when the computer was invented, which would give instant recall of knowledge out of millions and millions of pieces of knowledge that were stored up there, we think in the brain, but they're actually stored up in the spirit. Very few people know that. But man was not given immortal life. He was only given a temporary existence. But God offered him life. So one of the two trees was the tree of life. The other tree was really the way of death. It was called the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but that kind of knowledge alone, without the other kind of spiritual knowledge which could be revealed, would result in death. So it also was the tree of death. Now the tree of life was also a tree of knowledge. So each was a tree of knowledge, one of revealed spiritual knowledge, the other of self-acquired human knowledge, physical, limited to the physical and material, the one revealed by God, spiritual. One was a tree of life, the other a tree of death. Very few people have ever understood that. Adam had to make a decision. The one tree represented the way of life, which is the way of righteousness. God's revealed spiritual law, the way of righteousness. The other represented the way of sin. And brethren, I say to you that today, even some of the ministers in this church don't know what sin is. It's time for us to wake up. I am absolutely astounded that some of us still don't know what sin is. Now, it all started back there. Christmas has something to do with it. I'll try to explain that as I go along. But one of those trees represented righteousness, a way of life. The other, a way of life that was sin and would result in death. The way of righteousness would result in eternal life. The way of sin would result in death. Is that plain? They were both trees of knowledge. One was life, the other was death. But even we in this church seem not fully to know what sin is. Now, the tree of life was a way of life, but it's a way humans do not come equipped with instinct like animals. For example, you see a little calf born. In less than 2 or 3 minutes, it's on its 4 legs walking. A human baby born cannot learn to walk until about 1 year of age. Close to 12 months before, and some even longer than that, perhaps. But a little baby calf knows how to walk immediately in the first 2 or 3 minutes of its birth, of its life, and it knows where to go. It goes for its dinner, and it knows how to suck milk, and it knows where to find it. A human baby doesn't. A human baby can't take care of itself at all. Someone has to feed it and has to teach it how to suck milk even. You have to take care of everything with a baby until it's old enough to be taught how to take care of itself. Eliminative processes, everything else. That's why we have to have diapers for babies. Until they're old enough to learn to take care of themselves. The tree of life represented a way or an attitude of mind. Now, humans are not led by instinct. They are led by the mind. And the tree of life is a state of mind or an attitude of mind that leads to an action that is the way of life, the way of righteousness. Now, it all originates in the attitude of mind. It finally conceives into an action, which is sin. James will tell you what sin is. When you're tempted, and if you retain the thought and the temptation, finally it turns into the action that finally is sin. But it starts first in the mental attitude or the mind, which decides what to do. Now, The way of righteousness is one way, and the other way is sin. And we need to learn the difference between those two ways in a way we don't seem to understand even yet. It's an attitude of mind and heart, and it is the attitude of outflowing love. Now let me say this. The law of God can be expressed in one word only, love. But love is never incoming. That is not love. That was lust. Love is always flowing out toward God, first of all. That's more important than toward neighbor, but also toward your fellow man. That is the very essence of righteousness and sin. It is an attitude of mind that leads to an action. Now, let's get that straight, because it seems that we haven't gotten it straight yet. And it's outflowing love, first of all, to God. That is more important. But the world doesn't think that's of any importance. Now, the world started off with Adam, and he chose the way of get, the way of vanity and of self. Now, I explained self a while ago. It includes everything you call self. But it's self in self-love. I love me. I don't care about you. I'm bigger than you are. My old man can lick your old man. You ever hear young kids say that? My old man bigger than yours. Well, that's part of self, his old man, isn't it? I hope we teach our kids to not call their fathers old man. You ever think about that? You ever teach your children? So, the way of love toward God is exalting God. Now, the way of self exalts self, and that is vanity. And vanity is sin. I'm getting down to the root principle of sin. What is sin? It's all in one word. Now, we've had too many men and ministers in this church. They've gone through Ambassador College. I guess it's all my fault, brethren. I should have taught all of the students better in the first year of college. I couldn't think of all of these things. I haven't done a perfect job. I'm just an ordinary human being. I felt when I was converted, I was a burned-out hunk of human junk, not worthy to be thrown on a junk pile. But I learned that giving is better than getting, that's God's way. I gave myself to Jesus Christ, who bought and paid for me. I told him I couldn't see what he could ever do with me, how he could ever use me, but if he could, I would give myself to him. Now, I've tried to do that, and I have not done it perfectly. I haven't given myself to him perfectly. I've retained a little bit of self along the way. I'm ashamed to say. But I will say this, so have you, every one of you. Not one of you can say you haven't. So we've all done that. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God, every one of us. Oh, yes, I'm a sinner saved by grace the same as everybody else. But actually, it gets down to the attitude. And the attitude is that you really want to give yourself to God. You want to serve Him. You want to give rather than get. Give yourself to Him. And that was my attitude. And I haven't changed that as a basic attitude. Now, already many habits had developed that I didn't overcome right away. Some of them I overcame right away. Others, it took a little longer. Perhaps some of them haven't been totally overcome yet. I hope that before I die, that I shall have overcome every habit. I can only do that through the help, the grace, and the power of the living God. Of myself alone, I cannot do it. Of yourself alone, you cannot do it. But we can will to do the right thing. We can pray to God, and enough prayer, and enough submission, and enough keeping in constant contact with God, He will put His Spirit in us, and through His Spirit, He will make us righteous. And we can't do it by ourselves. We need to get into this sin question. Actually, in Hebrews, we learn that we shouldn't have to begin back to these elementary things. I said, I think, last Sabbath, When a child is born, we neglect our child, usually. Have you neglected yours, you parents? You that are going to be parents and that are now in college, you better be thinking about this thing. When you're married and you begin to have children, you're taking on quite a responsibility. Most people think, well, the children are just, in other words, we all want to get. We just want to enjoy, we want to have. We want to enjoy children. Why do people want children? Not because they want the responsibility of taking care of them, but because they want whatever they get from that child, the love, the affection, a lot of things you get from a little child. But you have to give. And there's a great responsibility that accompanies it. So the average family neglects the teaching of their child until he's 7 years old, and then they send him to school and let the schools teach him. And what do the schools teach? Just whatever has come from the way of Adam. Only materialistic and physical knowledge. The way of get as against the way of give. And they don't know of any other way. The way of righteousness they know not. And they don't teach the way of righteousness in first grade, second grade, third grade in school, or in high school, or in college, or in university. They don't know anything about it. Now, Adam chose one way, self-acquired knowledge, which is materialistic knowledge. Finally, in this 20th century, we've come to the place where many great, awesome accomplishments have been made. But on the other hand, look at the other side of the story. Look at the appalling evils in the world today. One half of the world is hungry, ill-fed, living in filth and squalor, poverty-stricken. One half of the world is ignorant, illiterate, and I can't even read and write without education. And what is education? Education in this world is physical, materialistic education. And it doesn't tell you how to live. And it doesn't teach you what is sin. Most people think sin is doing what you think is wrong. And of your own mind, you will never realize what is wrong and what is right, because you don't think like God does. Now, God's law is the way of love. I'm coming to that a little more as I go along. But this world started with Adam. Adam chose the way of get. He chose the way of self. He chose the way of vanity, exalting the self. He debased God. He says, God, get out of my life. I don't want a relationship with you. So God shut up the tree of life, and it was shut up until the second Adam, Christ, came. And Christ has opened it to the few that are called just in the church. And to all of the others, Jesus said, no man can come to me except the Father which sent me draws him. God isn't calling the world to salvation even yet. It isn't true that all and that whosoever will may come. That is not true. You know that occurs in the Bible in one place, and that's over in the last book of your Bible, after the millennium, after judgment, after the day of judgment. After judgment has come to the world, it hasn't come to the world yet. It is not true now that whosoever will may come to Christ. They cannot. Now, the world doesn't know that. The churches in the world don't know that. The Methodist Church doesn't know it. The Roman Catholic Church doesn't know it. The Baptists don't know it. The Church of Christ doesn't know it. The Pentecostal people don't know it. They just know how to yell, glory, hallelujah. I'm better than you are. And when you get the Spirit like I got it, then you'll be as good as I am. I exalt me. I debase you. And that is not the Holy Spirit, brethren. It just isn't. But Adam chose the way of get, the way of vanity. I love me. And that's the way the world started out. And the world started acquiring knowledge on that way and from that attitude of life and knowledge about material things and how to deal with matter, with the things of the ground and the things that come out of the ground. Now, love to God is to exalt God, not yourself. And love, first of all, is to God, and secondly, to neighbor. And that is the law of God. And sin is the transgression of that law. Now, what is the world that we must come out of? God tells us to come out of the world and be separate, and we're a separate people altogether. What developed from the forbidden fruit that Adam took? This world is what developed. This world developed. Now, what is the world? And what developed? And along in the world, they developed this thing of merrymaking at Christmas time. But it has no meaning whatsoever when you get down to it. No meaning that is going to mean anything immortal or eternal to you, or that is everlasting. It's just merrymaking for the night. Wake up with a headache tomorrow morning, maybe in jail, if you're caught with drunk driving. And that's all the world knows. But just what do we mean? If you'll notice now, from 1 John, the second chapter, and beginning with verse 15. Love not the world. That's the teaching of the New Testament that God tells us. And we have to come out of this world and be separate. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world... Now, what is worldliness? What is in the world? What is it? What is the way the world is gone? The lust of the flesh, that is, desires of the flesh to have things, to please the different senses, the sense of sight, the sense of feel, sex, the sense of the exhilaration that you get from alcohol, or you get high on drugs. Lust of the flesh, what is it? Even the taste of food. Many foods that taste good that are bad for your health. And people wonder why their health is not good. They don't think about eating food that's good for their health and will keep their minds clear and their bodies in good shape. They only think of what tastes good to the palate. Lust of the flesh. Brethren, I tell you, we're just simply loaded with that, and we don't realize it. All is in the world lust of the flesh. That is, desires, just selfish, self-centered desires of your own flesh, of the five senses, the sense of hearing. Now, there's good music and bad music. And Satan has got bad music going and gotten all of the younger generation today on bad music. Rock, and pure rock like it's finally come, is having a very bad effect on the mind and the spirit. And kids don't realize it. They never give it a thought. They just know it seems to please them, so they want to do it. They just want to go the way that seems to please for the moment.